Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So we already know that self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles, have a bit of a challenge maybe with some people. Some folks not going to be comfortable with them, immediately go to Skynet or something. and listen, there's a whole bunch of legitimate issues, legal, ethical, that come into it. But we're learning more about the Uber crash that happened in Tempe, that Uber crash that took the life of a pedestrian.
Yeah, we have the NTSB that just came out with a report. This is the National Transportation Safety Board, and they have released their preliminary report. It's an ongoing investigation into what transpired in Tempe when on March 18th, a woman was hit and killed while she was crossing the road with her bike, and she was hit and killed by a car involving Uber self-driving capabilities. Now we're getting some more information out of that report this morning, Bruce.
Investigators with the National Transportation Safety Board say the vehicle's systems detected 49-year-old Elaine Hertzberger 6 seconds before crashing into her.
Whoa.
The NTSB says the vehicle didn't stop because its emergency braking was disabled.
Okay, so how I read this, tell me if I'm misreading it. The technology in and of itself works. The technology exists that you could see a pedestrian or somebody in the road in the pitch black and have plenty of time to stop the vehicle. The engineers, Uber, however you want to say it, had adjusted the, I've heard the term sensitivity, to the point that it just didn't. It knew there was something there, and it didn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Right?
And so those are very important aspects of this story to point out, that technology was turned down, tuned down, if you will. And why? Why? If you have the capability,
right,
to detect this individual and allow your autonomous vehicle to prevent hitting her, why would you turn it down? Well, we know that at the time, Uber was trying to get their, I think they were calling it like intervention numbers down, meaning the amount of time that the person behind the wheel would have to intervene when the car was in the autonomous
A defeat for an autonomous vehicle if the human has to keep grabbing the wheel.
And they wanted to get those numbers down because the CEO of Uber, the new CEO of Uber, when he first came on, wasn't too fond of the whole self-driving program, had talked about getting rid of it altogether.
Oh.
And so they were looking to bring down those numbers. Now, it's also important to point out that not all self-driving cars and the technologies are created equal. Waymo is big-time self-driving manufacturer here in the state of Arizona. Chances are you've seen some of their vehicles driving around. When you look at the rate, and I might be using the wrong word, but you get the point. The amount of interventions that Waymo has per however many miles
driven,
and Uber were extremely different. Like, Waymo seems to be doing an awesome job with it. Uber seemed to suck at it.
Mm-hmm.
So that might have been why that technology was turned down, because
they were losing the technology battle.
So yesterday, a big announcement made right here in Arizona.
Immediately after a crash 2 months ago outside of Phoenix in which an Uber self-driving SUV hit and killed a woman, Uber put its autonomous driving program on hold. Now Uber is officially shutting down its self-driving program in Arizona. The company is still planning to resume testing in California and Pennsylvania.
Okay, so why are they shutting it down only in Arizona? We're still going to do it in other places, but we're going to stop doing it in Arizona, which makes me kind of raise an eyebrow at that.
Why? Are they getting pressure from the governor to shut it down?
What, you ruined your brand here? You know, that because it was local and because you're in the spotlight in a negative way? Are Are people in California talking about an Uber crash in Tempe today? Probably not.
No, but there's probably some pressure as well within the state to maybe change some regulations or have a little bit more accountability.
But have we heard Waymo or the others talking about that?
No, no, no. But what I'm saying is, like, but it's not their turn of the barrel. It's Uber's turn of the barrel right now.
Oh, yeah.
And so there may be some political pressure that had led to that decision. Yeah. I don't know. But I'm saying there's a reason they shut it down.
It goes far
beyond this tragedy.
Yeah, sadly, because I think there is, and you know, this is the balance. This is a fine line to walk. And if you look at, because I look at autonomous vehicles like I look at airplane travel, space travel, anytime that man has invented technology, there have been miscues along the way. The first flights of airplanes weren't nearly as safe as those today, and they learned over time. The problem is, in that learning over time, people got hurt and killed along the way. Talk to test pilots. Talk to, you know, crews of spacecraft. Do you know what I mean? I'm not wishing for bad things to happen, but the idea that you can develop a technology like this and never have anything go wrong, I think, is unrealistic as well. Yes, things are going to go wrong. Things went wrong when they developed anti-lock brakes. Things have gone wrong when they developed airbags.
Are you just saying this is the cost of doing business?
I think that the cost of developing a self-driving autonomous platform or technology is, some things are going to go wrong along the way. And if something goes wrong, you shut the whole thing down, you've defeated the purpose.
They haven't shut the whole thing down. They shut it down in Arizona.
See,
that's the thing.
And it appears that maybe, I mean, if you look into this, and you mentioned the numbers for other competing technologies. Again, everybody has their own mouse trap. And Waymo, as an example, and Uber use different technology in their vehicle. They're not just different companies. They're competing technologies. Think about this. VHS or Beta, okay? Which one of these technologies is going to win out? Now, that competition is a good thing in that it breeds innovation, but that competition also puts pressure on people to push sometimes when maybe it's not the safest thing to do. Where do you find that balance? I can acknowledge a certain level of risk, but I can acknowledge a certain level of risk when you get behind a car anyway. We get behind the wheel of a car or you drive down a street anyway. How much are we willing to put up with for the chance of developing a technology of self-driving vehicles, which we are told in the long run would be much safer for humans?
Yeah. Okay. So to put it into perspective here, I've got some numbers for folks.
Waymo.
They're doing the best when it comes to the amount of miles driven before a human has to engage.
And those numbers come from the state of California, where they are required to release this information. These aren't like PR releases.
Right. No, exactly. California actually has some regulation, so they are forced to release these numbers. Arizona doesn't have that regulation, so that's why we don't have them Arizona. So Waymo, between December 2016 and November of 2017, so about a year, mm-hmm. Waymo drove, let's call it 350,000 miles in California. And in 350,000 miles, a human had to take over out of the self-driving mode 63 times. That means that those cars were driving roughly 5,600 miles between human engagements. Does that make sense?
Right.
Okay. General Motors came in second. So Waymo is 5,600 miles before a human has to take over. General Motors is at 1,200 miles before a human has to take over. And right now, Nissan is at 208 miles.
It sounds like we have some clear winners in the technology battle. How soon will others pack it up and adopt, again, I'll use the VHS or Beta model, when you say, okay, fine, we're going to use their technology to do this, because the competing technologies are not equal. It is interesting.
The point to make with all of that, not all self-driving technologies are created equal.
Great point. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah, great point to make in there. A court has ruled that it is illegal for President Trump to block you on Twitter. One of my squad goals now, sadly, has been removed. But should he be able to block people on Twitter? And what law says you can't? An interesting ruling from a judge.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
This is going to put me on the side of President Trump today, Pamela.
Interesting.
I would call it a odd, somewhat bizarre decision that a judge ruled that the president of the United States cannot block people on Twitter and cited the First Amendment in it.
In a 75-page written ruling, Judge Naomi Reese Buchwald ruled that President Trump's personal Twitter account, @RealDonaldTrump, constitutes a public forum and that excluding certain users based on their viewpoints violates the First Amendment. The judge writes that blocking users, rather than muting them, prevents those users from seeing or replying to the president's tweets. She said she recognizes that the president has his own First Amendment rights, but that he can't exercise them in a way that infringes on the rights of his critics.
I couldn't disagree more. This strikes me as a First Amendment issue. First off, if you're not conversant in Twitter, which I realize not everybody uses Twitter, blocking somebody on Twitter just means that you don't see their posts and they don't see yours. How is that a violation of the First Amendment?
Well, I think what the judge was getting here is not so much the President Trump can't see Bruce St. James' Twitter feed. Let's play this hypothetical situation out, all right? Because it's not so far from reality.
No.
That Bruce St. James gets blocked.
I get blocked all the time.
From the real Donald Trump Twitter feed, okay?
And you would a goal of mine.
I was going to say that
would
be a badge of honor for you. But let's play that out in a hypothetical situation. The issue this judge is raising is not that President Trump can no longer see what Bruce St. James is doing on Twitter. The argument the judge is making is that Bruce St. James can no longer see what the president is doing on Twitter. That meaning that you are preventing people from getting information from public figures through a forum for which that public figure, in this situation, the president of the United States, releases a lot of important information.
I will acknowledge that the framers or the authors of the Constitution couldn't have imagined
Twitter.
Okay, I will acknowledge that social
and
media
if they
in
could,
general, yeah, they might have done it different. So so play this out.
Okay, let's do it.
By this argument, if Twitter is in and of itself part of the First Amendment, If you follow this logic where it's going to apply to, first off, it only applied to the president. I'm assuming that it applies to all public officials the same thing. But she didn't mention that. This was specific to the president.
Because it was just against the president, yeah.
I understand, but it's a very narrow decision in that sense. Is Twitter allowed to ban or think of the Milo and I cannot, Yiannopoulos or whatever. He was kicked off of Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Is that a violation of the First Amendment? Can Twitter stop somebody else from being on Twitter if being on Twitter is a requirement to having your First Amendment? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, so Milo can't read President Trump's tweets because Twitter kicked him off. That's a violation of the First Amendment.
The judge seemed to boil it down to these two questions. Can a public official block someone from seeing their Twitter feed given First Amendment protections of free speech? And does it matter if that public official is the president? The judge in this case decided both questions. The answer was no, you can't.
I think it also infringes on a variety of other rights. But again, playing that out, Twitter would be in violation of your First Amendment rights by banning you from Twitter.
Well, not necessarily. No, because
Milo's going to sue today.
No, I don't think so. Because Twitter is a private company and they can do that. The First Amendment, and I think that this is what people lose a lot of time. The First Amendment is a government protection. When you have a government official, such as the President of the United States, blocking you, That is different than a private company blocking you.
And maybe you don't get blocked often enough. But even if somebody blocks you.
No, you're an expert in that, not me.
Okay. You can still see their tweets. You cannot engage with them. You still have the opportunity. These people are not. Are you telling me that? I want to say there were four, five, six plaintiffs in this case that had been blocked by Donald Trump. Are they completely unaware of what Donald Trump is tweeting? Of course not. They absolutely can see what he is tweeting. They just cannot engage with him. There are many other ways for them to understand what the president is tweeting. Specifically, being blocked on Twitter is a violation of the First Amendment. That seems like a pretty broad ruling on that.
The Knight First Amendment Institute says they're pleased with the court's decision, which reflects a careful application of core First Amendment principles to government censorship on a new communications platform. To a certain degree, they're kind of agreeing with you that, like, our forefathers could not have fathomed Twitter.
The block feature on Twitter. Yeah.
The president's practice of blocking critics on Twitter is unconstitutional.
Yeah. I disagree. I actually think I don't think it's a constitutional issue. There are plenty of them, don't get me wrong. I don't see that one. Yeah. We'll see. It'll end up on appeal. It may end up in the Supreme Court. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Oh, I'd love that.
Can elected officials block people
totally,
on Twitter?
That'd be
and is
awesome.
That a violation of the First Amendment?
Oh, I so hope so.
So you've probably been paying attention to what's going on in Hawaii, the lava flow, the volcanic eruptions. We have a guest in next, a photographer who was there. Give us a firsthand account.
Lives right here in the valley.
Yeah, and we're tweeting out some of his pictures right now at Bruce and Pamela and some of his videos. Oh my God, do I have some questions? It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
I'm assuming that you've all seen at some point now pictures or videos from Hawaii with the volcanic eruption and amazing images of lava. You know, in this day and age, you just don't get to see it that often. Let's be honest.
Right. You don't get to see it that often. Not often do you hear about, you know, authorities handing out masks to people to protect them from the ash pouring out from the Kilauea volcano.
Refrigerator sized boulders, flaming chunks of lava.
You don't get to see that very often either.
No.
But when you talk about the images, when you talk about the video, so many of us are just like captivated. I can sit there and watch the lava bubbling up out of it. Like I watched the Yule log over the holiday season. I could just sit there mesmerized by it. But we've got a very special guest in studio right now. Local guy here in town. Aaron Gramansky, who was actually in Hawaii, shooting this historic event for ABC News. And we've seen some of your images and your videography work there. And we've got some of it up for our folks up at
tweet it
on Twitter at Bruce and Pamela. So you can check it out yourself.
Oh,
Aaron, you know, we get to see and hear all the facts from the reporters who you were shooting when we watch what's happening in Hawaii. But I kind of want the other stories. So we appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How hard was it to get to a site where you could shoot those amazing photos and video?
Oh, it was difficult. First off, I just want to give Bo Byerly and Media House a huge thanks because I wouldn't even have got the call from ABC without him. So he's
Fair
kind
enough.
Of ABC's go-to guy here in the Valley.
Nice.
And he was
By
busy,
the way, I'm available as well. Just throwing it out there.
So yes, thank you, Bo, and thank you, ABC, for trusting me with this. It is difficult. They've restricted access to the areas where you can get close to the lava other than to the locals there. So all of the media outlets had to become real good friends with the locals to kind of... In a way, we're kind of sneaking in there to get right up close to the lava.
Yeah, you know, you hear that in a lot of situations, too, where in big news stories and far off lands, like you got to get it in with the locals in order to help you out, get to where you need to go.
Aaron Gramansky, again, owner of Mudhouse Media, a photojournalist. And again, we have his pictures and video up of some of the amazing shots he got in Hawaii of the lava, of the eruption. Help me understand this a little bit. And I saw a meme that made me think about this.
Oh, great.
When we watch this,
yeah,
I think we have the impression Like, this whole island is on fire. You can barely take a step without doing it. Oh, my God, it's going to run through. Listen, I think most people don't know that Honolulu isn't anywhere near this. Like, yeah. You know, it's going to take out the Marriott any minute now.
In a sense, that's where the media is failing us, because we're almost pulling away all the tourists from that island, and it's really hurting them. And that's kind of what the locals were frustrated the most about from the national coverage, was it's restricted to just kind of one small area of that corner of the island. Now, that being said, I mean, I had no idea the scale of it until I got up in a helicopter and we took kind of the aerial tour, and you can see how much area that this, you know, the lava has covered. And it's we got to remember that, you know, this is an island that was created by a volcano, and it's always going to be that, and it's growing by the second, literally. So it was incredible.
So, Aaron, when you think back to this incredible opportunity that you had to go cover this natural, it's a natural disaster, but phenomenon as well, what are you going to remember? What's the one story, the one thing that you look back at your time there covering the Kilauea volcano and the eruption that you're going to be telling at dinner parties?
It's spectacular. It seriously is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen with my own eyes, much less with my camera. And it's just, I remember as you're driving in there at night, as you would get closer, you'd probably be a good 15 miles away from there, and the sky would just be glowing over that area. And this is a pretty rural area. There's not a lot of, you know, city around that.
Right.
You know, it's probably a good 20 miles from Hilo, which is the nearest town. And as you're approaching it, the sky's glowing. And as you get closer and closer, especially because it's always cloudy, the clouds are reflecting that. You look up at the clouds, it's like these beautiful sunset clouds, but they just change. They don't change. They're that same color, unlike a sunset where you maybe get, you know, 2 minutes of it and then that color's gone. And as you get closer, you start hearing Fisher 17, which one is the mm-hmm. biggest, most powerful ones. It sounds like a war zone.
Really?
You just hear, I mean, sometimes it sounds like a jet flying over. It's like,
okay.
And then you'll hear, like, you know, almost like explosions and just, you know, it's unreal.
Whoa.
And then it's you can get closer and see it. You see the stuff flying up in the air, like,
I gotta see, is it on a trajectory to hit me? It sounds like mortars.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounds like and looks like. I mean, the girl that was nice enough to kind of help us get in, her dad was the one person that got hit by this.
We saw the pictures with his porch. Something went through the roof of his house.
Yeah, that was his daughter was the one that was kind of helping us out with this. So,
if you want to see some of these images that Aaron's talked about right now, as far as the sky, like looking like the sky's on fire, almost.
That's an amazing picture.
We've got them up right now for you. You can check them out for yourself at Bruce and Pamela up on Twitter. And Aaron, you were sharing with our producer a story about walking around and having these bubbles. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we had just finished the live shot, and it was super late at night or super early in the morning, depending on your perspective, probably about 2:30 in the morning. And we're walking back to the vehicle because it was about a 20-minute walk from where we would set up and do the live shots close to the lava back to where our vehicles were parked. And it was kind of through these, you know, rural bamboo fields. And you could just hear occasionally the earth kind of growling. It's almost like you skipped breakfast and it's about 10:30 in the morning,
right,
and your stomach just starts, and you would hear that and you'd be like, all right, we've got to move.
I was gonna say, that has to be a little disconcerting.
Yeah, it really was. And
the ground underneath us is growling.
It's grumbling. It's really grumbling.
Oh,
and then we look down, and seriously, probably this area, probably, I don't know, 4.5 feet by 8 inches, you just see the earth sort of rise up like a wave. Like it's liquid or something. I mean, it's just, you know, it's ground, but it bubbled up, and it was methane coming up.
Wow.
I am jealous. I your pictures took me there. It made me want to be closer to it. It is amazing, and an amazing natural event that's happening. And we can watch it because of the amazing images that you brought back for us.
Thank you. Like Pamela said, I could just stare at it endlessly, too.
Yeah. It's mesmerizing. We need a channel. Just a channel of lava
flow.
Hashtag lava porn. That's what it is.
Aaron Grominski, owner of Mudhouse Media, photojournalist and local Valley guy, having covered the Kilauea volcano in Hawaii. Thank you so much for joining us
today. Thanks for having me.
Outstanding. We appreciate that. And again, check his pictures out at Bruce and Pamela on Twitter. We have pictures and videos up from Aaron's own point of view, his eye. Amazing, amazing shots. Guess who the latest name being thrown around? Hashtag me too. Boy, this is going to be disappointing for some folks.
Yes, it is.
Coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
It's a list of names. Kevin Spacey, Bill Cosby, Matt Lauer, Bill O'Reilly, Louis C.K., a list of names of men who have all been accused and or charged or indicted in some way, shape, or form of inappropriate behavior, sexual harassment, sexual misconduct, or rape. And now we have what I think for a lot of people would be another name to add to, and keep in mind, an accusation.
A CNN investigation has uncovered a pattern of alleged inappropriate behavior by legendary actor Morgan Freeman, both on set and at his production company.
Morgan Freeman is the latest powerful Hollywood man to have accusations filed in the hashtag MeToo kind of category. And Bruce, this isn't one brave woman coming forward. This isn't two brave women coming forward. Quite a few.
16 people agreed to share their stories with CNN. Several of them said that Freeman made constant comments about their bodies and clothing choices. 8 said that they were victims of harassment or inappropriate behavior. 2 of those 8 said that they were actually subjected to unwanted touching by Freeman. Now, something very telling is that only 2 of the people, Carol, that Ann and I spoke with were willing to use their names for fear of retribution and speaking out against someone as powerful as Morgan Freeman.
So 16 people in total have come forward with some sort of story. 8 of those believe they were victims of sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior. Again, using the scale of, I'm assuming that means the other half of them, the other 8 of them were making inappropriate comments or something, but not to the level of harassment or touching or something that would approach criminal.
One woman who was a production assistant on the movie Going in Style, she said that while filming in 2015, Freeman subjected her to unwanted touching of her lower back and comments about her figure on a near daily basis. In one incident, she says that Freeman kept trying to lift her skirt and asking if she was wearing underwear.
Yeah, so we've got these allegations coming out against Morgan Freeman, 16 women speaking out on a variety, a scale of different accusations. It's also important to point out that there was an individual who witnessed some of this and did something about it.
She says that this incident took place allegedly in front of his co-star, Alan Arkin, who told him to stop.
Oh.
So the whole skirt
like
incident,
Alan Arkin stepped in, actor Alan Arkin.
So you can picture it. There's a woman wearing a skirt, Morgan Freeman over there, kind of harassing her, lifting it, doing this, doing that. You can tell that the woman is uncomfortable. She's telling him to stop. She's kind of like fighting him off a little bit here. Alan Arkin goes, hey,
quit
Morgan,
it off.
Knock it off.
Morgan Freeman has issued a statement, if you will, and I think it's telling in there a little bit.
Oh, really? What is it?
I will read it, and then
okay,
let's read
it.
Between
yeah,
the lines.
Okay.
Anyone who knows me or has worked with me knows I am not someone who would intentionally offend or knowingly make anyone feel uneasy. I apologize to anyone who felt uncomfortable or disrespected. That was never my intent. It's not that I didn't do any of these things. It's that these women took it the wrong way. Is that what I'm reading into that? I would not intentionally do this. I'm sorry if you felt uncomfortable. That was not my intent. Well, I mean, the same way?
I don't even know how I'm reading it. I'm just disgusted by it.
Intentionally offend or knowingly make anyone feel uneasy.
I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted at the perpetual excuses that powerful men make to justify disgusting behavior. I didn't intentionally or knowingly. Come on, man. You don't know that lifting up a girl's skirt and asking her inappropriate questions is a bad idea. You know better. You did it anyway. You got your hand slapped by Alan Arkin, and now CNN's putting you on blast. It is what it is. Don't give me a poor excuse of a statement and expect people to give you a pass on it.
Yeah, listen, innocent until proven guilty. Accusations are not convictions. But he's not saying, I didn't do it, this isn't me, like others have saying. He's saying these women
took it the wrong way.
Took it the wrong way. That's what I'm hearing.
No, they took it the way you meant it, man. Own up to that.
Morgan Freeman, the latest in there, and he's already, people are pulling some campaigns, and how will this affect his career? That'll remain to be seen, but that's just new news coming out just in the last couple of hours. Is it smart for the NFL to force players to stand for the national anthem or stay in the locker room? The new rules go into effect soon. We'll talk about them next.